Hi, everybody. I'm Hoppy Kirchival. The name Hot Rod Hunley will forever live in the minds of West Virginians. The Charleston native lived a most incredible and unpredictable life. Hunley's exploits as a player and a broadcaster put him into the record books. He's the first former NBA player to become a team's lead play-by-play announcer. But Hunley was much more than just an announcer. He became the first former player to be enshrined in the Basketball Hall of Fame as a broadcaster. Outwardly, Rod Hunley was all smiles and fun. But inside, he struggled with the darkness of being raised without his parents. After nearly 3 years of production, a documentary on Hunley's life is now complete. It's the untold story of one of West Virginia's most favorite sons. I recently sat down with the film's director, Dan Lohman, and producer, Tony Caridi, to learn more about the one and only Hot Rod Hunley.
Then with 2 minutes to go and his team leading 105-87, Hunley delights the capacity crowd with a ball control show.
He would compete. When the games would get out of hand, that's when you would see him do some things that were probably, I've never seen one do it to this day and time.
The fans just sensed it. They clamored for it. They stomped their feet and clapped their hands. And it happened to be, they would call it a showtime. They would, yeah.
People loved it. And people loved the way he played. They loved the entertainment value he brought to the game.
And Hunley pulls in the rebound. Watch this behind the back pass.
And there are a lot of significant figures in West Virginia, political, economic, sports. So you could have picked a lot of people. Why'd you pick Hot Rod Hunley?
I would say I interviewed him one time when I was here at West Virginia University getting my master's degree. And I'd always heard the stories as well. And from that time forward, I always wanted to know a little bit more behind the layers. Okay, what, there's something else there, and I wanted to know what was up with this guy, and so that was the thing that drove me on this piece. But I think nationally, when you start to look at him, he has one of the most interesting stories that I've ever seen. For what happened to him as a child, for what happened to him, for what he did as a player. There are things that he did on the basketball floor that no one has ever done at that time, but since. And I think that's what made him so interesting. And so I wanted to give people a view of what this guy really was. It's so much more than just, oh, Hot Rod. Oh, Hot Rod. That's just Hot Rod. That's Hot Rod. And so I think this piece gives a view to that.
I've always been amazed by that he could make that transition and make it as well as he did.
And Meredith goes right corner, arches a high jumper, no good, rebounds his own shot, puts it in.
And he was entertaining, and he made you feel like you didn't have to be at the game. You could follow the game and feel that you were really into it just by listening to Hot Rod Hunley.
Tony, what drew you to the story?
Well, right after his passing in March of 2015, Dan and I were talking, and we both kind of came to the agreement that in West Virginia, he is revered as one of the all-time great players, but not so much as a broadcaster. And then if you were to go west of the Mississippi, they know him more as a broadcaster and didn't realize he was an All-American player, the first pick in the NBA draft. And then that's just a part of it. The other part of it is a wild life and an unusual life that he lived. So that started it. And then when we started to kind of pull back the pieces of it, we just continued to shake our head and say, this is an amazing story.
And he's telling me he'd walk to school and he'd sneak into the back of some bakery and steal donuts so he'd have something to eat.
Can you imagine at his age not being able to go home and tell the story of the day, asking for advice? Rod had none of that. But when you think about it, and it still amazes me, is this little boy who had no parental guidance, no adults to turn to, happy, smiling, joking, seemingly enjoying life.
People knew, and particularly West Virginians knew, or people who follow basketball knew, he had a rough upbringing in Charleston, West Virginia, that he played at WVU, that he was the crown prince of basketball, that he had an abbreviated pro career, that he was a broadcaster. So those were known things, Tony. What happened when you started to peel back the layers?
I think what we noticed when you started to peel back is that upbringing, it used to be kind of, yeah, you know, a bunch of different people raised Hot Rod in Charleston and he hung out at pool halls. That was kind of the general spin on it. Well, there was a lot more to that than just a kid that was passed around. the movie talks about his mom's, literally his mom's words from one of the books that were written about how he was abused early on when she would leave them with people when he was a toddler, and then how that impacted his entire life from that point on. He raised himself. He was living by himself as a junior and senior in high school, and that lifestyle really never left him. He was always, in some form or fashion, looking back at that time growing up.
We were in Portland for the playoffs. He goes, "Watch this, Bowler. Watch this." So he went over to the bar at one corner. "Hey, it's my birthday." "Well, Hot Rod, I'll be dog. Bud Light." Gets a free Bud Light. Looks at me, walks over, middle bar. "Hey, hey, it's my birthday." Another Bud Light. Walks to the other side of the bar. "Hey, hey, it's my birthday." Gets another free Bud Light. Then he looks over at me and goes, "Bowler, that's how it's done."
Dan, what did you see when you began to dig deeper?
You saw a very complex figure. You saw somebody that left an incredible impact on everybody who met him. It wasn't just people who knew him for, let's say, a year or knew him for 5 years. If you met him, you had a story about him. It was amazing the number of the through lines that people were able to share. There were stories about him and how notorious he was about his tightwadness. If you went out with him, you were going to pick up the bill. And we didn't have to ask people about that. They openly shared those stories. So those sort of things just jumped right off the page at you. And everybody had a story about Hot Rod Hundley and the impact that they made, that he made on them.
I think he saw that when he was with Dick Enberg at TBS, when he worked with me at CBS. I think he saw that, you know, he wasn't going to be the hottest item all the time, and he had to find something that had some longevity to it.
And he finally had that opportunity when New Orleans came into the league, and he went there to be their play-by-play voice.
A lot has been said about how Dad kind of would like blow opportunities and not take things seriously. He quit smoking like cold turkey. He was sitting in, I think, his own bar. He owned a bar called the Court Jester in Phoenix. And there he was smoking. He just turned around, looked around. He said, "What the hell am I doing?" And he put it out and he never smoked again.
The well-known story is Hot Rod, always fun, the party, gregarious, likable. People wanted to be around him. But Tony, there was that other side that you all also, that story you tried to find and tell. What part of that story stands out in this piece?
I think what it is a story of redemption, basketball-wise, as a player in the National Basketball Association. He did not live up to expectations. He was the first pick in the NBA draft, but only lasted 6 years in the league and made two All-Star teams, which is very respectable. But he knew, and those around him knew, that he could have been much better, and he said that. I blew my chances because the Lakers, who drafted him at the time, were in Minneapolis, then moved to Los Angeles. And that's kind of like giving a torch to an arsonist because that lifestyle was exactly what he loved. And as a result, it took away from his career. So that ended prematurely. He knew that. When broadcasting came as an opportunity, he thoroughly embraced it. I mean, tremendously embraced it. And then made one of the most difficult transitions that anyone has ever made. And that is former player becoming play-by-play announcer. Now, everyone knows that former players kind of fall into being color analysts. No one at that point had ever been a former player turned play-by-play announcer and then to become a lead announcer of an NBA team as the play-by-play guy. It's a different deal. And he took that opportunity a second go around in the league, not as a player, but to stay with the game as a broadcaster, and he became a Hall of Fame broadcaster.
He had a deep sadness. He always had that lonely kid. No matter what we did as a family, he didn't even want to be with us. He needed to be out. But he always pushed family all the time. It was very important to him. Family, family, family. He did push that a lot for, like, not having a family.
Dan, a lot of the story hinges on the interviews with his children, and they provide a very unique perspective because they had a complicated relationship with their father. What was it?
All of them had a little bit of a different take, I think, but the redemption that, or I guess I should say the forgiveness that they had with their father towards the end was particularly poignant.
Because he wasn't around.
He was not around. And I think that left a deep impact on the daughters. And he would come around and he would be a part of their lives, but it wasn't persistent.
At the end, they gained a very good understanding, and actually it happened in Morgantown. They, all three of them, say when his number was retired at WVU, that weekend was the weekend where they fully gained an appreciation and a good understanding for the first time of what their dad's life was and why he was the way that he was. And at that point, I think for the rest of his life and their lives, they had a peace about that. And I think at his passing, they were at peace with him. He was at peace with them. And it was the best possible scenario. I think that, you know, we went into this thing, Hoppy, and we did not want to make this two different things. We did not want to make this a fluff piece, and we did not want to make this a negative piece. We wanted it to be a truthful piece. And I think we've accomplished that. And his daughter, Kim, who's kind of the oldest and the one that's been, you know, great with us, when she watched it for the first time, she was good with it. And despite the fact that there are things in there that, you know, some people would like to keep quiet, it was they were wonderful. The three daughters were wonderful and really speaking from their heart. And so it's not a hack shot at somebody. And at the same time, it's not a fluff piece. It's the real deal. And I think that's why people will resonate around this.
There are so many things that happened to this guy, one after the other. And so for this guy to go through what he did early in his life and then to do the things that he did and to impact the number of people that he did, it is an amazing story. So we tried to condense it down as much as we could and to impact an audience and give them the story, so to allow them to make up their own mind to who this guy was. Because he was, I think, one of the most interesting, complex, accomplished athletes and people that have ever been a part of sports in this country, for what he's done, not only on the floor, but off the floor. He just happened to be in West Virginia and Utah, two states that are very parallel. He just happened to be on different parts of the country.
Anything else you want to add?
It was an amazing project to work on. It's going to be 3 years in April from when we started. And we're very much looking forward now to getting it out there so that people, as Dan said, can make their interpretation of what it was and who he was. And I do think we've got a piece here that'll stand the test of time that gives folks the real story. You know, there's so many times you'd heard Hot Rod Hundley stories here in Morgantown or from Mountaineer fans. Oh, I remember the time that he ran through the stands and he got a hot dog, and you kind of always looked at it with like a raised eyebrow going, come on, that couldn't have happened. Well, yeah, it did. And we have it from guys that played with him. And so it's the real deal.